Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanihim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Mem Gimal. Today's daf has been dedicated anonymously for the Hatzlacha of Moshe ben Rachel u'mishpachto. Today's daf is being studied the Alun Nishmat Hacham Baruch Rafael ben Miriam and Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanihim Began Eden. Amen. We are beginning at the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Gimal. Bed Shamay Omrim Ma'avirim Me'ad Ashulchan Atzamot VeKilipin. Ubet Elel Omrim Mesalek Et HaTabla Kula Umna'ara. The first Machloket in our Mishnah between Bed Shamay and Bed Elel is referring to what you have on your table on Shabbat. Kilipot, atzamot, v'kilipin. Atzamot are bones, and kilipin are shells. Rashi learns we're talking about shells that are not fit for human consumption, and they're also not fit for for animal consumption. And still, Bet Shammai says you're able to move them off the table directly. On Shabbat, after you finish eating them, he does not consider them mukseh. Whereas Bet Hillel says that you lift the entire tabletop. In those days the tabletop was not affixed to the legs, so it was movable. So you lift the entire tabletop, indirectly moving the mukseh, move it to the side and shake it off, and then of course put the tabletop back. So in this case, the way we have it in our text, Bet Shammai is more lenient then Bet Hillel. Now, Tosafot right away asked the question on this piece, how is it possible to say that according to Bet Shammai, you'd be able to actually move the bones? Which is, we never found an opinion in Mukseh, even the most lenient opinion in Mukseh, which is Rabbi Shimon, he doesn't allow you to move bones that have no use. They're not fit for human consumption, they're not fit for animal consumption. And therefore the Tosafot learns the sugya differently. He says we have to be talking about bones and shells that are fit for animal consumption. The only question is, how is Rashi going to learn? So the Pnei Yoshua answers for Rashi, that must be with discussing here the issue of graf shel re'i, which means sometimes when you have something that is so repulsive that's in front of you, so it's disgusting. So the halakha does say that graf shel re'i, you're allowed to move it away. So that's the heter here of Bet Shammai. He's allowing you to move the graf shel re'i, whereas Bet Hillel is saying, if you don't have to move the graf shel re'i directly, do it indirectly, which means if there's an option, exercise the option of moving it indirectly as opposed to moving it directly. So that's the machloket between Rashi and the Tosfot. The Gemara, the Mishnah now gives its next case. Ma'avirin me'al, that should say, me'al ha-shulchan pirurin pachot mekezayit. Which means now on the table, if let's say you have crumbs that are less than a kezayit, and all the more so if they are the size of a kezayit, which means the leftover bread, these items are not mukseh, even though human beings might not eat the leftover bread, but it is fit for animal consumption, therefore everybody will say it's non-mukseh. The sa'ar shel afunin, that would be the pod of the pea, which is also fit for animal consumption. The sa'ar adashim, that would be the pod of the lentils. Mepenei shehu ma'achal behema, because that is fit for animal consumption. And the last case of the Mishnah would be sfog, that's talking about a sponge. Im yesh lo or bet achiza, if it has a leather handle, mekanchin bo, then you could wipe with it on Shabbat. Ve'im lav, en mekanchin bo, but if it doesn't have a handle, you can't use it. Now what's the issue over here of a sponge, whether it has a handle or not? So the issue over here is sechita. We know one of the things that are asur on Shabbat is to squeeze. Now, sechita takes place when a person is going to lift up this sponge. If it's wet, especially if he's wiping with it, if he's going to come directly in contact with the sponge, inevitably he's going to squeeze it, and that's going to be isur. So the Mishnah says if it doesn't have a handle, it's going to be asur. But if it has a handle, so now you're not directly having your hands on the sponge itself, but you're touching the handle that's on top. So there the Mishnah says mutar. Why? Because it's not inevitably going to come to squeeze. Now, the Ra'ad, that's the way Rashi learns. The Ra'avad questions Rashi. The Ra'avad says, what are you talking? If you're talking about squeezing, it's going to squeeze whether you have a handle or whether you don't have a handle. Even if you have a handle, bottom line, when you start to rub it against the liquid, that's what's going to happen. The sponge is going to squeeze. So the Ra'avad has a different shot over here. He holds that when it has a handle, it's not considered a sponge anymore. We consider it like a vessel, and when the water is coming out of it, it's like you're emptying out water from a keli. See, the person has a glass, and he pours water out. Is that sahita? No. So he's saying, once you put a handle on the sponge, it changes its status, so to speak. Now it's considered a keli. And then when the water comes out, you're just emptying out water from a keli. So that's the way that Avad understands what the handle does for us. Last part of the Mishnah, ben kach, whether you have a handle on it or not, nital b'shabbat ve'eno mekabel tum'ah. Number one, whether it has a handle or not, it's non-mukseh. Which means, let's say it's dry, a dry sponge is non-mukseh. Now, it might be classified as a klisha melachto le'isur. Now we know a klisha melachto le'isur, you can move it the tzorech gufo, or the tzorech mekomo. And the hadush of the Mishnah that Me'iri explains is that we don't make a gezerah dry to wet. And therefore it's mutar to move the sponge if it is dry. Second din in the Mishnah, and it's not mekabel tum'ah. Meaning in the laws of tum'ah, the Torah tells us clearly different vessels mekabel tum'ah. For example, keli ha'etz, if it's wood, if it's beged, if it's made out of wool, or you have matechet, if it's made out of metal, or if it's made out of sack. That's the goat's hair. But all other material is not mekabel tum'ah. This sponge over here is made up of a different material that's not included in the laws of tum'ah, and therefore it is not mekabel tum'ah. And the Gemara begins. Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Anu enanu ela bet Shammai kerebi Yehuda ubet Hillel kerebi Shimon. In our Mishnah, something out of the ordinary took place. Bet Shammai was the lenient one, and Bet Hillel was the Mahmir regarding the Atzamot and the Kilipin. Where Bet Shammai said you could handle them directly, and Bet Hillel was the one that said, Min ha'er et ha'tabla. So Rav Nachman comes along and says, no, our version has it the opposite way. Where Bet Shammai holds like the Bihuda, which is the strict opinion in Mukseh, and Bet Hillel holds like the Bishimon, which is the lenient opinion in Mukseh. Therefore, it's Bet Hillel that says you can directly move the Atzamot in the Kiripin, whereas Bet Shammai is the one that said, no, you just indirectly shake the table. Comes the Gemara and says, Ma'avirin, and we put Me'al HaShulchan Pirurim. Right? You're able to take the crumbs off the table. So the Gemara says, Misayah Le'el Rabbi Yohanan. This follows the opinion of Rabbi Yohanan that says, What? The Amar Rabbi Yohanan, Pirurin She'em Behem Kezayit Asur Le'abedan Biyad. Which means we learned in Masechet Berachot that Pirurim, crumbs that are less than a kezayit, still you're not allowed to discard them. You're not allowed to me'abed them. Therefore, the Mishnah doesn't say you take the pirurim and you zorek them, you throw them away. All the Mishnah says is ma'avirin. You take them off the table. But since they have still lechem, even though it's less than a kezayit, you're not allowed to throw it away. As the Gemara said in a different place, that it's kasher la'aniyut, that if people throw the bread away, Hashem could bring poverty. Gemara continues, Se'ar shel afunin. So we said that the pod of the pea, if it's on the table on Shabbat, it is permissible to remove it. Mani, who's the author of this Mishnah, or that statement, Rabbi Shimoni, delet le mukseh. Has to be Rabbi Shimon. That doesn't hold up the rule of mukseh. Because if you think about it, this pod came into Shabbat fit for human consumption. And now the pot itself is no longer fit for human consumption, which means on Shabbat the pot was part of the food that was fit for human consumption. Now on Shabbat it became fit for animals. So it changed its status. Who's the lenient opinion that says if something goes into Shabbat, not ra'uy for a behemah, and now becomes ra'uy for a behemah, who's the lenient rabbi? That's the Bishamon. So the Gemara says, Ema sefa. Yeah, but if you tell me the author of our Mishnah, based on the law of the Sahar Shil Afunim, you tell me the author is Rabbi Shimon, we have a question from the end of the Mishnah. Ema sefa, sefog, by the sponge. Im yesh la bet achiza mikanhein bo. We said if it has a handle, you could sponge with it. Vim lav im mikanhein bo. Atan Rabbi Yehuda. That must be going like Rabbi Yehuda de Amar, davar she'im itkaven asur. Which means, what's the logic we're thinking at this point? That why, if it doesn't have a handle on it, why is it asur? Because you're going to come to squeeze. But your kavanah is not to squeeze. Your kavanah is just to wipe up a spill. So therefore, it's davar she'im itkaven. And who's the opinion that says davar she'im itkaven is asur? Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara is like, how could you just tell me that the beginning of the Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon? And then at the end of the Mishnah, you're telling me it's following Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, no, Beha afilu Rabbi Shimon modeh. In the case of the sponge, even Rabbi Shimon is going to agree that it's asur, and he could be the author. Why? Rabbi Shimon agreed in a case where even though you're not having kavanah to do the melacha, but if it's going to happen inevitably, which we call a psik resheh, so then already he also agrees that it's going to be asur. So therefore, the case of the Mishnah that said that if you don't have a handle on the sponge, you can't use it. Why? It's going even according to Rabbi Shimon, because inevitably it's going to come to squeeze it once you put your hands on it, and therefore we can say the Mishnah is following throughout the opinion of Rabbi Shimon in mukseh, and also in the case of davar she'im itkaven in a psik resheh. Comes the Gemara now, gives a new case. Hane gar'inin de tamre. These pits of a certain type of date that's called armayata. Now what's special about the armayata dates? So that she tells us that first of all, the dates are fed to the animals. Them and their pits. Armayata, I read the Rashi inside, timarim ra'imim. They're inferior dates. Uma'achilina timarim atzmam the behema. And you give the timarim themselves to the animal. Hilkach agav imayhu the behema namekayme. And therefore, the pits themselves also go after the date. And therefore, these pits, let's say, which means, let's say, all you have is a pit of this tamar on Shabbat. It is non-mukseh, again, because it is fit for the animal. The Gemara says, "Hani garayne de tamre armayata sharu letaltulinu." It is permissible to move them on Shabbat and on Mukseh. Huil bechazian agav imam. Since their ra'ui, agav imam is through their mother. Meaning, since the date itself is non Mukseh, because it could be fed to the animals, and therefore the pit also follows the date, and therefore there is no problem of moving the pit on Shabbat. Ude parsayata asur. However, the parsayata date, Rashi says, temarim tovim hem. Behem machrim otam lebehema. And you don't feed these to the animal, so therefore the pit of this type of date is going to be mukseh. The Gemara then says, Shemuel metaltel lehu agav rifta. Shemuel would not handle the pit directly. He would handle it through bread, meaning he didn't, in these dates that we said that the pit is not mukseh, so we explain because it's ra'ui, let's say, for a behemah, but still Shemuel would not move the dates directly. He would move the date through bread, which is indirect contact. Now the only question is, why would Shemuel do such a thing? We know that Shemuel subscribes to the lenient view in Mukseh. That is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, there is no reason, according to Rabbi Shimon, since this pit is fit for animal consumption, even though, let's say, when it was going into Shabbat, it was covered with the date, and now the pit became revealed, and now it became ra'ui for the animal, still Rabbi Shimon says, that's not a problem, it's not mukseh. And Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon. So why is he taking it agav the bread? Let him take the pit directly. So Tosfot says a big chadush, and it's actually brought down in the halakha, that Shmuel was Adam Hashuv. Shmuel is considered a, you know, an important man, and people scrutinize everything he's doing. And therefore, he didn't want to pick the pit up directly, lest the people come along now and take a bigger leniency where they're not allowed. Which means, mitzad ad-din, he would have been allowed to move the pit directly, because it's not only for a behemah. But what? Shmuel was mahmin on himself because of his status of Adam Hashuv. Comes the Gemara and says, Shmuel ta'ameh. Now the Gemara has a side point. How did Shmuel take the date on the bread? Are you allowed to use bread for other purposes besides eating? So the Gemara says, yes, Shmuel ta'ameh. Damar Shmuel, oseh adam kol tzorko bepat. Which means, he holds you are allowed to do all your needs with the bread. Now, the Ramban asks another question over here. He says, hold it. Why don't you say that the bread now becomes a basis? Meaning, once you put the pit, which you're holding is mukseh, you're being mahmir, so you're putting the pit on the bread, so that becomes a basis. Now, we said basis, it itself becomes mukseh, so the bread should become mukseh as well. So to that, Tosafot, the Ramban answers that since you placed it on the bread with the intention not to keep it there, the intention was in order to throw it away. So therefore, the only time it comes a basis is when you put it on there in order to keep it there. I mean, you want it there, at least for the duration of Shabbat. Here, when you put it on, your intention was to immediately discard it, and therefore it does not become a basis. Now the Gemara tells us other rabbis, how they were mahmir on themselves, how they would discard the pit. So the Gemara says, Lava mitaltelehu agav lekana demaya. He would put it in a bucket of water and then discard it. Ravura ben Rav Yeshua avidu kegraf shel re'i. So he says that Rav Huna would make a pile of them on purpose on the table. Now you'd have a pile of these pits. Now once you have a pile of them, it becomes repulsive. Now as a din of graf shel re'i, once as a graf shel re'i, you're actually allowed to move them. You can move them with your hands. So the Gemara says, Amar le Rav Asher amemor v'chi osin graf shel re'i lechatechila. It means, are you allowed to go lechatechila and make a graf shel re'i? Which means, if you were eating and it happened, fine, but to go out of your way, to purposely make a graf shel re'i in order that you'd be able to move it, is that permissible? The Gemara says, no, that's not permissible, you can't do that. The Gemara continues about other rabbis. Rav Sheshad zarik lehu b'lishne. Rav Sheshat, he would spit the pit out with his tongue, which means he didn't want to take the pit out directly, so he would, let's say, spit the pit with his tongue, so therefore he would not have to come in contact with it. Rav Papa, Zarik Lu Achorei Amita, whereas Rav Papa, he would spit it behind the table. It seems he had a far reach, and he would spit it over the mita, over the bed. Amru alav al Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulas. They said about Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulas, Shayam mechazer panav achorei amita v'zorkan. He used to turn his head behind the bed that was behind him, and he would spit it and go over the bed, and that's how he would discard the pits over here. Now, just to analyze it, a pit that is not fit for human consumption and is not given to the animals, obviously, is going to be mukseh. So if a person is eating an olive on Shabbat, and now he finishes the olive in his mouth, now he has the pit in his mouth. The pit is indeed mukseh. So therefore the only option would be, is like what these rabbis did. Either they spit it out into the plate, or you know they spit it behind them, or they take a piece of bread, and they spit it in the bread, and they put it back on their plate. but you would not be allowed to directly take the olive pit out of your mouth unless there's still some olive on it. If there's a piece of olive on it, so therefore it's ochel still, and therefore you can take it out directly. So one has to be cognizant exactly when he's eating these olive pits, because they're really not ra'ui for human consumption, and we don't have animals, and they're not really ra'ui for animal consumption as well. So therefore one has to be careful either to leave some of the olive on the pit, or to indirectly get the olive pit out of his mouth. Hadran alach noted adam et beno. That finishes the 21st perek, and now we move to perek habit, which is the 22nd perek of the Masechet. Comes the Gemara and says, Mishnah, habit shenishbera. You have a barrel. The barrel broke on Shabbat. The barrel has wine in it. You want to save the wine. So the Mishnah says, Masilin hemena mazon shalosh se'udot. So you're able to save from the barrel enough wine in order to last you for three meals. Rashi says, Afilu bekelim harbe. You can bring as many kelim as you want in order to save for these three meals. We learned earlier in Perek Kol Kedveh that if you're using one vessel, then already you could save even as much as you want. The Hiddush over here is that when you use more than one vessel, the maximum they allow you to save is three seudot. What's the reason why they're being strict over here? Because when you start bringing more than one vessel, they're concerned that you might come to carry the vessels through a karmelit. And therefore, you might come to carry on Shabbat. And therefore, the rabbis are strict. They only said, listen, say, because again, the person's bahul. The person gets all flustered when he's trying to recover his losses. So he might unwittingly come and carry. So they said, if you're using one vessel, save as much as you want. But once you're using more than one vessel, the maximum they allow you to save is what? Three seudot. Furthermore, the Mishnah says, Ve'omer la'achirim, he's allowed to tell others, meaning his friends, Bo ve'atzilu lachem, come and save for yourself. That as she learns, that even the others that are coming to save for themselves can only save a maximum of three seudot. And the logic being over here is they're considered like the owners, once you're allowing them to recover. And the gezera is if you allow them to take more than three seudot, so they might come to carry the vessels in the karmeli where they're not allowed. So therefore, even the others have the same restriction. The Ran, however, argues on Nashi. The Ran says, no, the others, they're not bahul. The others are not flustered. They don't care, to save what's coming out. To them, it's all profit. So therefore, they're not going to come and carry a vessel in order to recover like the owner. So the Ran Sivara is they can save as much as they want. Now the Mishnah makes a condition, Ubilvad shelo yisfog, which means so long as they don't use a sponge to sponge up the wine, which is the wine is on the floor now. So the guy wants to put it in the sponge in order to save it. So why can't he do that? So that she says, because he might come to squeeze the sponge. The Gemara is going to actually say that the reason why it's asud is because it's a weekday activity. Now, according to that, it sounds like even if it has a handle on it, where we said in the previous Gemara, it's really not considered squeezing. But once you say it's a weekday activity, meaning ovdin dehol, it's a gezerah. That we don't want you to even use the handle in this case because it's domed to a weekday activity that you might come to squeeze it, which in this case over here where you're recovering your goods, in that case the rabbis, as we'll see in the Gemara, will make a gezera across the board that no sponging will be permissible bichlal. Comes the Mishnah and continues. Now we discuss the law of squeezing on Shabbat. It is forbidden to squeeze fruit on Shabbat in order to get their juice. What is the isur of sechita? She tells us it's a tulda of the melacha of dash. What is dash? Dash is threshing. What does threshing and squeezing have in common? Well, if you remember the kernel of wheat, they bang it in order to get out the kernel, right? So the same thing over here, where you're squeezing, it's like you're banging, you're squeezing the fruit in order to get out its liquid. So therefore the rabbis said, actually it's a suf from the Torah, that a toldah of dash would be sochet. So the Mishnah says you can't squeeze fruit. Now, v'im yatzu me'atzman asurin. Now let's say you had fruit, and automatically by themselves the juice oozed out on Shabbat. Mishnah says it's also forbidden to drink that juice. Why? You didn't squeeze it. So that she says gezerah, that if we allow you to drink the juice, you might come to squeeze it yourself. That's the opinion of Tanakama. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im le'ochlin hayotze mehen mutar, v'im le'mashkin hayotze mehen asur. Rabbi Yehuda has a different approach here. He says, listen, it depends what you bought the fruit for. If you bought the fruit for eating purposes and not for the drink that comes out of it, the juice that comes out of it, so if on Shabbat the juice came out of it by itself, mutar. Because we're not going to make a gezerah that you might come to squeeze. Because you didn't buy it for squeezing purposes, you bought it to eat. However, if you bought the fruit for the juice, then in that case we're going to say if it oozed out on Shabbat by itself, then it's going to be asur because you might come to squeeze because that's what you bought it for. So whereas Tana Kama is osir across the board, he doesn't care what the intent of why you bought the fruit for. If it oozes out on Shabbat according to Tana Kama, it is always asur. Rabbi Yehuda makes a haluk. If it's for ochlin, then it's mutar. Because well, I'm not going to come to squeeze, I didn't buy it for that intention. However, if it's for mashkin, you bought it for the juice, and they have the juice. So therefore, if we allow you to drink this juice, you might come to squeeze it. The last part of the Mishnah, halot devash shereskan me'ereb Shabbat. Halot devash is the honeycomb. The honeycomb has wax, and it also has the honey in the wax, right? So it says, let's say you crushed it from before Shabbat. You took the honeycomb and you put it over a keli and you crushed it. Now it's oozing out honey over Shabbat. The yatzu me'atzman. And now the honey is oozing out on Shabbat by itself. Tana Kama says, asurin. It's still going to be forbidden. Why? Because the gezerah is that you might come to squeeze it yourself. But the Bili Ezer comes along and says it is mutar. Why? That she says, since already it's crushed already. Right? And it's really not the derech to squeeze honeycombs. So therefore, if you squeeze it, if it crushed it before Shabbat, and it's oozing by itself, not the derech to go crush now a honeycomb in such a case, therefore the biria is, it is matir. Again, hachamim say we're all sitting this case, because you might come to squeeze one that's not crushed. And therefore he makes the, hachamim make the gezerah. Okay? Now the Gemara explains. Tana, lo yisfog biyayin. When the barrel broke, now you have the wine on the ground, the first din is you cannot sponge it up. V'lo yitapeyach b'shemen. Now what does litapeyach mean? So that she learns you're not allowed to take your palm and scoop up some of the oil. Now you have the oil in your hand, you want to get it back into the vessel. So you take your hand and you rub it against the side of the vessel, of the cup, in order to let the oil drip back in. So not only can't you sponge, but you can't even take your hand and collect it and rub it back into the keli. What's the reason? So the Gemara says, Shelo yaaseh kederech shehu oseh behol. Because we don't want him to do it in the way he does it in a weekday manner. Now, how are we going to explain this? So if we explain, let's say, by the sponging, if it doesn't have a handle, it's straight out sahita. I don't need to create a new reason. Weekday manner. It's asur because it's sahid. So that's what Tosfot says. The Hadush of the Gemara is saying, in this case, even with a handle, where it's not definite that you're going to do sahita, still to go in the street and collect wine with a sog, with a handler's asur, why? Ovdin dehol. What is the ovdin dehol over here? Because it can lead to squeezing. Now, according to the Ritba, he says no. He says this reason of ovdin dehol was not said by the sponge. The sponge is asur because it is squeezing. And we're talking about a regular sponge without a handle. And he says that's asur because it's asur. We don't need to generate a new reason for sponges. The ovdin dehol is only going on the collecting the oil with your palm and rubbing it against the side of the cup. Now, what would be the isur in that? So there's different ways of explaining why ovdin dehol is asur. One way of explaining ovdin dehol, a weekday activity, is because it could lead to a melacha. Another way of explaining ovdin dehol, the rishonim say, is it's just not in the spirit of Shabbat. Meaning it takes away from the aura of Shabbat, let's say, to do such a thing. So therefore they're saying, even though technically there's no isur in cupping oil from the floor and rubbing it against the keli to retrieve it, but you're involved now in retrieving your oil that fell out of the barrel, so it takes away from, let's say, Kiddushat HaShabbat, so that would be the Ovdin Dehol in that case. In any event, the Gemara continues, Tanu Rabbanan. Let's say a person had a basket of fruit and the fruit got scattered throughout his courtyard. So he's allowed to collect the fruit by hand, and according to our text in the Gemara, he eats them, meaning you're allowed to collect in order to eat, but you can't collect them and retrieve them to put them back in the basket, or not in the box. Again, because that's a weekday activity. Now the question is over here, what is the isur that can come from collecting fruit and putting them in a basket? What's the issue? So the Ramban learns that the issue over here is that they fell into a chatzer, into the courtyard, where there's stones and there's dirt and there's rocks, and therefore it looks like over here an issue of borer, even though it's not selecting, because you're actually just taking the fruit and you're putting them in the basket. But since there's good and bad, and you're putting it in the basket, so it looks like you're doing borer for a later use. Now borer is only permissible when you're taking the good from the bad if you're eating it immediately. So, but even if your intention is to eat it immediately, but once you put it in the basket, it looks like you're storing it. So that's the ovdin dehol. That's the Ramban's opinion. According to Harambam, he learns the issue over here is that it looks like the isur of me'amir. What is me'amir? Me'amir is gathering. Now, it's really not me'amir, because me'amir is only applicable in the place where the fruit grow, meaning in the field. The guy went into the field where they're growing, you collect their fruit that are scattered all over the place, but here it's in the haser. But still, ovdin de'ol, because, you know, it can lead to the isur of me'amir. So it's a machloket, the Ramban, and the Ramban is the issue over here, ovdin de'ol to borer, ovdin dehol to me'amir. In any event, the Gemara continues. Now we discuss the law of sechita, squeezing fruit. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shemuel. Rav Yehuda said the name of Shemuel. Modeh haya Rav Yehuda lachachamim bezetim v'anavim. Rav Yehuda agreed to the rabbis when it came to olives and grapes. What do you mean they agreed? She said, Rabbi Yehuda made a chiluk between what you bought the fruit for. If you brought it for food to eat, then I don't care if they ooze that on Shabbat mutar, because I don't make a gezerah that you're going to come to squeeze. If you bought it for the juice of it, then if it ooze that on Shabbat, that's going to be asur. However, Hakamim said it doesn't matter. All fruits that ooze that on Shabbat, the drink that comes out of it is forbidden. So the Gemara says in the name of Rabbi Damar Shemuel that the Biyuda agrees to Chachamim when it comes to Zetim and Anabim. olives and grapes, even if you bought it for food, and they ooze out on Shabbat, the Biudah is going to say it is asur. Why? Because that she says, since the majority of people buy olives and grapes in order to squeeze to get the oil and the wine, when it oozes out on Shabbat, he's happy. Which means, even though he bought it for food, but you know what? Most people eat the oil and drink the wine. So he's happy that it oozed out. And therefore there's a gedda that he might come to actually squeeze. So olives and grapes, everybody agrees that that would be the most strict in the laws of Saita, where even the Bihuda is strict. So the Gemara says, my Tama, what's the reason? Since the majority of people use these fruit in order to squeeze the juice, Yahiv da'ate, so his mind is on it, even if he didn't buy it for that intention. The ulama, Ula said in the name of Rab, Halu kayar biyuda abizetim va'anavim. Whereas Rab said, no, the biyuda is consistent in all fruits, even zetim and anavim. If you bought them for achila, the juice that comes out of it on Shabbat is mutar. So here we have a mahloket. How does the Biyuda rule by Zetim ve'anabim? Rabbi Yohanan Amar, Rabbi Yohanan summed it up in Halakha. He said, Halakha ke Biyuda b'shar perot. We take the Biyuda's lenient opinion by other fruit, that it depends what the intention of the buyer was. Ve'en halakha ke Biyuda b'zetim ve'anabim. But regarding olives and grapes, we're going to be mahmir. We don't take the Biyuda. Meaning olives and grapes, no matter what, if they ooze out on Shabbat, the drink is going to be forbidden. That's the way Rabbi Yohanan ruled. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel. Now Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel over here has a different understanding, and he says, Modeh haya Rabbi Yehuda l'hachamim b'zetim v'anavim, u'modim hachamim l'Rabbi Yehuda b'shar perot. He says over here something that's a little strange. The Gemara, by the way, is going to ask. He says, listen, there is no mahloket by olives and grapes, and there's no mahloket by other fruit. Meaning, by olives and grapes, everybody's going to hold asur. Whatever the reason why you bought it for. Why? Because stam, these items, majority of people use them for the liquid. Good. And if you agrees. Other fruit, everybody agrees that if you bought it for eating purposes, mutar. So now the question is going to be, so what are they arguing on? I mean, obviously we have a mahloket and a mishnah between Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. And here Rabbi Yehuda Mashiach is coming along and saying, well, they're not arguing by Zetiva Hanavim, and they're not arguing by other fruit. Which means, Zetiva Hanavim, everybody says, no matter what the purpose you bought it for, asur. Other fruit depends. If you bought it for ochel, mutar. If you bought it for meshkeh, asur. So the Gemara says, Amar le Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Abba, and Rabbi Mai Penige. So then what's the mahloket? So Amar le lechitishkach. He says, go learn, go check it out yourself. It wasn't so easy. We didn't give the answers. Go find it out, and then you'll figure it out. Amar of Nachman bar Yitzchak, mistabra. It's logical to say, betutim v'rimonim pelige. The argument here is, tutim is berries, and rimonim is pomegranates. Now, what is special about berries and pomegranates? We read Rashi. Mistabra betutim v'rimonim peligi de'ika de'ba'u lehu le'mashkin. Because these are somewhere in the middle. There are people that buy these fruits for the juice. Hilkach ma'ashvil rabbanan kezetim v'anabim. So the rabbis put berries and pomegranates with zetim and anavim. The Rabbi Yehuda palik elave, but the Rabbi Yehuda argues, aval sh'ar perot leka deba'alu lemashkin. But by other fruit, the majority of people don't use them for their juice, and therefore hachamim will agree to Rabbi Yehuda. So the machloket is zetim and anavim. Everybody says it's for the juice, no matter what you buy it for. Sh'ar perot, majority of people do it for food. And therefore, only if you buy it for drink purposes, it'll be asur if it dripped out on Shabbat. The machloket is tutim v'rimonim. Hakamim say, no, there are people that use it for the juice. Therefore, whatever you buy it for, it's a problem. But Rabbi Yehuda says, no. There comes the Gemara and says, D'tanya. And actually, you have a braita to support this. Zetim shemashach mehem shemen. You have olives that the oil was drawn out of it on Shabbat by itself. Ve'anavim, grapes. Shemashach mehem yayin. And the wine was drawn out of the grapes again on Shabbat by themselves. Vichnisan. And the reason why you bought them, ben le'ochel, ben le'mashkin. I don't care whether you bought it for eating or whether you bought it for the juice. Hayotze mehen asur. Good, and that's according to everybody. Tutim shemashach mehem mayim. Berries that were drawn out of it, its juice. Virimunim shemashach mehem yayin. And pomegranate that their wine came out of it. And she says that that's what you call the juice that comes out of a pomegranate. Yeah. You could also call it yayin. Vichnisam le'ochlin. If the reason why you bought them was for eating, hayotze mehem mutar. Then what comes out of it will be mutar. Remashkin ulestam. If you bought it for beverage purpose, or you just bought it with a blanket intention, hayotze mehen asur, devre Rabbi Yehuda. So you see clearly in the Braita, Rabbi Yehuda makes a difference even by tutim v'rimonim, if you bought it for achila, or you bought it for shetia. V'achamim omrim, ben le'ochlin, ben le'mashkin, hayotze mehen asur. Whereas the rabbis come along and say by tutim and rimonim, it doesn't matter. So then we clearly have a braita to support the way we're understanding the mahloket. Zetim v'anabim, everybody agrees. Asur. Shar perot, everybody agrees. It depends. I'm sorry, it depends. If you bought it for mashkin, then everybody will agree. Asur. If you bought it for ochlin, everybody will say mutar. Where's the mahloket? Mahloket is tutim v'anabim. The hakamim come along and say, tutim v'anabim, no matter what you bought it for. Asur. And the Yehuda is going to come along and say, no, if you bought it for Ochlin, it is mutar. Now the only question you can ask over here is, the one that gave us this approach was of Nachman Bar Yitzhak. And the way he gave us the answer, he said, mistabra. He says, mistabra, the word means, it makes sense to say the mahlokan is by tutim v'rimonim. It makes sense. You supported yourself with a braita. Mm-hmm. You don't use the word mistabra when you bring me a blatant proof that's explicitly written in the braita. So why is it sounds like mistabra, meaning he himself was in doubt. So that she comes along and asks that question, and that she says like this. Let's look at the dibura matriv hakamim omrim. V'had denakat rav nachman nishna de mistabra. That which of Nachman used the word mistabra velo amar behedya, and he didn't say explicitly the betutim v'rimonim pelige b'shum de'ika lememar, because you can argue and say peligi betutim v'rimonim v'uadin l'shar perot u'li'adi'acha kohod Rabbi Yehuda nakat lehu, which means I could say like I could learn the braita differently if I wanted to. He didn't choose to learn it like this. That's why he said, Mistabra. Because if somebody wants to argue, you can learn the braita differently. How? I can say like this. The braita chose a case of tutim v'rimonim. But you know what? Not only tutim v'rimonim, even other fruit. And you know why it chose tutim v'rimonim? To come and say that the Biyuda is lenient even by tutim v'rimonim. Which means, and it'll be also lenient by shar perot. Which means, maybe the reason why it chose tutim v'rimonim in the braita is to come and tell you the strength of leniency of Rabbi Yehuda, which is coming to say that Rabbi Yehuda, tutim v'rimonim, there are people that use it for drink. So maybe it's coming to tell you that not only tutim v'rimonim, but even shar perot, that she's lashon. I read again. V'had nakat rav nachman nishna de mistabra. V'lo amar behedya betutim v'rimonim peligi. Mishum dika lemar peligi betutim v'rimonim. Because I can tell you, not only they're arguing in tutim v'rimonim, v'uadin shar perot. I can tell you that shar perot as well, where we're learning, the way that Nachman's learning about shar perot is no machloket. Which means what? That shar perot, everybody's going to to say that even the Hakamim are going to say that it makes a difference. I could say no. Maybe Shaar Perot is also a Mahloket. And Hakamim are going to be strict by Shaar Perot. And the reason why I made the Mahloket by Tutim V'Rimunim is to show you how lenient the Biyuda is. But really they're arguing even by Shaar Perot. So therefore, since the Braita can be interpreted a little different, that's what Rav Nachman used the Lashon Mistabra. So again, to conclude at where we are at this point, the Gemara is giving us a interpretation that there's three levels. There's Etim Ma'anavim, which doesn't matter what you bought it for. There's Sha'ar Perot. Sha'ar Perot, where we say also everybody's going to agree where it makes a difference. Achila, yes, no problem. Shtiya, problem. And Tutim V'Rimonim, you're going to have a Machloket. Whereas Hakamim are going to say it doesn't matter what you bought it for. Tutim V'Rimonim are Asur off the back, because it's like Zetim Anavim. And Rabbi Yehuda is going to come along and say, no, even by Sha'ar Perot, it is going to be Asur.
Before we conclude today's daf, I'd just like to go back to daf Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Rishon and just review a little more clearer the issue over here of these pits of the dates. And we'll start again. Hani Gar'inin de Tamre Armayata. These pits of the tamarim, the dates that are called Armayata, Sharu le Tetulinu. They are permissible to move these pits on Shabbat to Ilva Chazian Agav Iman. Since they are fitting from their mother, literally, meaning these dates are fit for animal consumption. Going into Shabbat, they're fit for animal consumption. That's what you use them for, both the date itself and the pit as well. According to the Bihuda, who is the strict rabbi in Mufseh, this would also be permissible because since going into Shabbat, they were not fit for human consumption. They're designated for animal consumption, so they didn't change status. Therefore, even the Biyuda will say it is permissible for these items to be moved. The date already is fit for animal consumption, as well as now if the date is cleaned off, the pit itself didn't change its status, it's also fit for animal. Ude parsayata asur. However, parsayata is a date that's fit for human consumption. The pit, however, can be fed to animals. But going into Shabbat, this date over here was fit for human consumption. And after you finished eating the date, now it changed. Now it becomes fit for animal. Nolad, very good. According to the Yehuda, who's strict on Mukseh, if it goes in fit for humans and then changes to be fit for animals, that would be considered Mukseh. So the Gemara says, Shmuel metaltelu agav nifta. So Shmuel ate one of those dates that were fit for human consumption, and then once he finished, now the pit, even though it was fit for animals, he didn't directly take it out of his mouth, but he would spit it out on bread. To that, the Tosfot asks, why was Shmuel strict like Rabbi Yehuda? We know Shmuel himself was lenient like the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon says that if an item goes in originally fit for human consumption and then changes and becomes fit for animal consumption, it is not mukseh. So he should have been able to take out the pit directly. To that, Tosfot answers, Adam Hashuv. Since he was Adam Hashuv, and as we said, they scrutinize him, they're watching him, the people might learn from him to be more lenient, so therefore he was careful on himself. But indeed, according to the Bishamon, it would be permissible to take the pit out directly, so long as it is able to be fed to animals that are going to eat it. And then the rest of the Gemara also brings different rabbis that were strict on themselves. To eat the olive, not a problem. But now the olive turned from fit for human consumption to animal consumption. They were strict not to directly handle it, but to put it, let's say, in a bucket of water. Or one rabbi would spit it out in front of the table, beyond the table, like the Gemara said. This is a little clarification on how to learn the situation of the olives.
Baruch Adonai Le'olam.
Amen. Amen.